The most innovative companies are going further with T-Mobile for Business. Tractor Supply trusts 5G solutions from T-Mobile. Together, we're connecting over 2,200 stores with 5G business internet, empowering AI so team members can match shoppers with the products they need faster. This is enriching customer experience. This is Tractor Supply with T-Mobile for Business. Take your business further at T-Mobile.com/now.
Hey everyone, Jake and Gino here with some exciting news.
The Wheelbarrow Profits podcast is changing to the Jake and Gino Show.
You will still be able to find new episodes every Thursday on YouTube or your favorite podcast streaming service.
It's the same great show with the same great content.
And the same great hosts. You're not going to want to miss an episode.
So be sure to catch us on the next episode of the Jake and Gino Show.
Hello, everybody. It's Jake Sanzano, host of the Jake and Gino podcast, here with my co-host, the multifamily mentor, the coach, chef, father, six, bestselling author, the G-Daddy, Gino Barbaro. Gino, how's it going?
Mr. Stenziano, we've got a special guest on today. I want to bring you back to when I got married.
Here we go.
I got married. I did the waltz. I'm a great, great dancer. And all of a sudden, I'm singing opera, too. So I'm going through the whole Italian mode. I eat, dance, and sing. And I sang to Kenny G's waltz. Amazing. You should have been there. And we've got another Kenny G today, but he doesn't play any instruments as far as I know. He's a musician with numbers. So this is going to be a very interesting, entertaining, and educational podcast. So let's let it rip, my friend.
All right, here we go. Formalities. Today's guest is the president of KGC Direct and author of the best-selling book, The Age Curve, How to Profit from the Coming Demographic Storm. The book takes the listeners into the future using demographics with uncanny accuracy. And today, he's here to share a little bit of that knowledge. So without further ado, Ken Grombach, welcome to the show.
Be here.
All right, let's unpack this. What is the upcoming demographic storm? Because in multifamily, we have a little something that Gino likes to call the CapEx tsunami from the 60s and 70s products. And I think this might tie into that in an age-related way. So please unpack that for us, sir.
Well, in terms of housing is a big story, but one of the big stories. The other one's healthcare. But you have roughly 330 million people that live in the United States. We have 150 million housing structures, housing units, and that includes everything from a trailer to a mansion. Largest part of our population, 80 million baby boomers and 88 million of their kids, Generation Y millennials born 85 to 2004, largest generation in the history of our nation, for the most part, are still living under one roof. What's happening is the young people are 17 to 36 years old. You'd think that at 36, they'd already be, super adults. They're not. They hung on to adolescence until they were 30, and a lot of them still live at home, which is why they're not finding their way into the labor force yet. And actually, they weren't welcomed into the labor force because their parents didn't leave for whatever private reasons they have.
The baby boomer, say that again. The parents didn't leave?
No, the baby boomer parents are currently 57 to 76. Mm-hmm. So the baby boomer parents stayed in the labor force, a lot of them, because their health was fine. And why not?
Got it.
And the other one was financial. You had 2008 hanging over their heads. So what we have is a monster crop of late bloomers, and it's called Generation Y millennials. They are currently 17 to 36 years old. What are they going to do? Well, they're moving out. They're throwing away all those trophies they didn't deserve. They're moving out of their parents' basement. they have to go live someplace. So they're setting up household. Are they going to buy houses? Yeah, eventually. But right now, multifamily housing is the story, because a lot of it has to do with the fact that they have huge student loans. But I think all of that's going to work out. Those are temporary problems. Mm-hmm. Based on my calculations, and these are my calculations, over the course of that generation, we're 25 million housing units short of our needs. 25 million.
Wow.
25 million. Now some you'll see some stats where they say, no, it's closer to 5 million. Yeah, but make sure you're comparing apples to apples, because what I do is I look at the demand over the course of their generation, not just So it could even be higher than that.
And where they're living, there has to be houses in the areas that they want to be in the path of progress as well. So
yeah, of course, and there's not, and that's a problem. Why a ton of them are moving to Texas? Why? Because you can still buy a 2,000 square foot house there for a couple hundred grand. So what will happen? As I spoke to the logging industry 3 years ago, and I said, are you guys preparing for what's going to happen to the housing industry? And they said, we cannot cut trees fast enough. I just recently spoke, and I'm a regular in the plastics industry, and I'm a regular in construction, cement, concrete. You're going to see houses built out of concrete. You're going to see houses built out of plastic. Mm-hmm. because we physically don't have the ability to, we don't have the wood. But so that's all coming our way. That's tsunami. Now, the other tsunami is the fact that baby boomers, one, are tired of being cold. So they're leaving the North. And if you look at the states that have gained House seats and the states that have lost House seats, it's almost one-on-one. They're up North, they're cold, they move down. The population goes up in Florida. So we pick up a House seat. Florida picked up two. North Carolina picked up one. Utah picked up one. LDS. Yeah, God bless it. Or Oregon, Montana. Both picked up one, and I'm sure I've left somebody out. California lost one, even with close to 40 million people. What's going to happen is the baby boomers are currently 57 to 76 years old. The body breaks. Your physical body statistically breaks on average at 75. So what's going to happen? Baby boomers don't have dying on the punch list. They also have a ton of money. Anybody's guess, but my guess is about 100 trillion when you count their real estate. And they're going to throw money at healthcare. And where are they in droves and in wealth? Florida, especially South Florida. We live in North Naples. You can't believe the money down here. I mean, the mayor drives a Ferrari and has a private jet. I don't get it. So healthcare is going to be huge, bigger than it's got. So those are two. And there's plenty more. You know, you could go on and on.
So Ken, Jake likes to jump into things. I like to wine and dine people. Can you tell us a story of how you got into demographics? I mean, because you had a great story in the book about the Honda motorcycles and all, and you saw the tsunami coming and you're warning people and people still don't get it. Can you share that story with us?
Sure. My wife and I had an advertising agency in Connecticut for about 21 years. Mm-hmm. We started in 79. And one of our signature clients was American Honda Motorcycle. We had 140 dealers from the tip of Maine to Pittsburgh to Washington, D.C. And we just printed money with them. I don't know if you've ever done business with the Japanese, but they pay by return mail. And they don't question anything. And they're really wonderful. They're very trusting. So we sold thousands and thousands and thousands of motorcycles throughout the Northeast. We had the whole region. Until 1986, I got a call in the spring after we ran millions of dollars worth of advertising, radio, TV, billboards, newspapers, everything. An American Honda called me up from California, said, Ken, did you run the ads? I said, yeah, we ran the ads. And he says, we don't have any traffic. Our dealers are all screaming that they don't have any traffic. And he said, in your defense, literally, Kawasaki, Suzuki, and Yamaha have exactly the same problem. No traffic. What's going on? And he said, this slug of a bike made in the United States called Harley Davidson leaks oil, can't get out of its own way, is selling like crazy. What's going on? Remember, this is 86. I said, I don't know. I really don't. So they sent an elite contingent of marketers over from Japan. If you can imagine that, they didn't know anything. And we met with them and conferred with them and came up with all kinds of strategies. We reduced the price on our signature bike by a third. It was like $6,000. We reduced it to four and sold a few. No, it's never happened like that in automotive history. We came up with new products. We introduced scooters, nothing. By 1992, business fell for the Japanese brands 80%. 80.
Wow.
Yeah, gone. So all of our dealers were 5% after tax profit. So all of our dealers closed. I mean, they just closed. Eventually, we had no dealers. So we shook hands with American Honda, and that was the end of that. And we went our way. They went their way. They got into other stuff. And 1996, election year, October, Clinton versus Dole. Politics is heating up intensely. And I'm reading the Hartford Courant, which you're familiar with, newspaper in Hartford. Full page editorial on Generation X is born 65 to 84. Probably you, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, see, you're a serious problem. And I mean, no offense. I mean,
I've always been a problem.
Oh, I like the book. It's great in here. Hit me with it, baby. I'm ready. Hit me.
Okay. Well, it was saying Generation X, the people born 1965 to 84, were not participating in the political process. And they were not voting. They were not running for office. They were not giving it their money, not giving it their time. They were not participating in politics. And what was the United States going to come to? How would we protect our form of government if Gen X was our future? They were a bunch of lazy, slacker, couch potatoes. And they were terrible. And as I'm reading this, I have 40 people working for me, and I have 20 Gen Xers who are not lazy. And so I called in our research department, which is one guy, really good, brilliant kid. And I said, go find out everything you can about Generation X. I said, this doesn't make any sense to me. I said, Bureau of Labor Statistics, CIA Factbook, census data, whatever you can find. I want to know the story on Generation X. And he came back 3 days later with essentially a report, you know, and I'm the audience. And he said, Generation X, you will never perform at the level of the boomers. And I said, so they're lazy. And he said, no. He said, there's fewer of them. And I said, what do you mean fewer of them? 20-year generation compared to a 20-year generation, there's fewer of them? And he said, yeah, 9 million. I said, what's the percentage?
Wait, how many?
Nine million.
9 million fewer.
9 million fewer. I said, what's the percentage? Critical mass. And he said, 11%. And I'm thinking, all of our dealers are 5% after-tax profit. You drop your market by 11%. You're done. You can't fix that. It's impossible. So I said, so we have a hole in our population? And he said, yeah. I said, does anybody know this? And he said, no. I said, and is anybody writing about it? And he said, no. I said, okay, 1957 was the peak of the baby boomers, 4,300,000 babies. What was the trough of Generation X? And he said, 1974. How many babies? 3 million. I said, so that's like 35%. Mm-hmm. I said, we have a hole in our population and nobody's talking about it. And it's a complete drop. It's a nosedive. It drops like a stone. And he said, yep. I said, we just solved the motorcycle problem. So we knew we sold motorcycles to men 16 to 24. That was it. At 25, they sold that death wish because they were and bought a ring and got married. So once the baby boomer exited that narrow demo, and it was a narrow, narrow demo, it was over. Uh-huh. And I said, wow. And we're all doing this one day, same report. And I said, wait a minute, 0-100 years old. Let's go back and take a look at what Generation X did from birth. They shut down maternity wards. They shut down the toy industry. They shut down bicycles. They shut down motorcycles. They almost shut down Detroit because Detroit could not, and I remember the commercials, they could not figure out how to market to Generation X, but they never bothered to count them. They never knew that they were dealing with a smaller group. In 2008, you shut down the housing industry. Wherever you go, you're a problem. And no, seriously.
So then, Ken, let's take in the immigration.
Is it Generation X or the parents not having enough, right?
It's just so Jake let's, and Gina, actually, that's what it is,
let's
bro.
Get let's get very clear that it was Generation X's parents that did not have enough testosterone. They were not getting it in enough to make sure that the population succeeded, okay?
No, that's exactly how people think, but it's wrong. And I'll tell you why. Because the parents of Generation X was called the silent generation, born 1925 to 1944. And again, big picture, 30,000 feet, long-term macro, okay? The silent generation, it's the smallest generation of the last 100 years.
Yep.
Why? Because between 1925 and 1944, there was a goose egg for immigration. Nothing.
Yes.
You didn't come here during the Depression because it was just as easy to starve wherever you were. Mm-hmm. And during the war years, it was illegal. So we had Generation X's parents. So once we understood what the heck Generation X was, and that is a hole in our population, then we understood everything about talent pool, because you were a terrible talent pool. You made terrible cops. You made terrible everything because you were terrible in sports. Terrible because there weren't enough of you in comparison to the generation that was right in front of you, baby boomers. The team that beat the Russians in hockey in 1980 was the peak of the baby boomers that were born 57, 58, 59, 60, 61. It was the best talent pool we've ever had. It wasn't training, it wasn't coaching, it wasn't anything except
numbers.
It was a bigger talent pool, period. Okay, 1998, Levi Strauss. I hate Levi Strauss. I was in the schmata business, the rag business. We grew a jean shop from about 10 million to 400 million, one of our clients, but I was very, very tight with them. And dealing with Levi Strauss was very difficult because you had to bribe them to get the product because they couldn't make it fast enough. So you had to buy what we call dreck or bad product. And then they would allocate, give you your allotment of indigo blue denim. I get a call from Levi Strauss, chief marketing officer from San Francisco to my little podunk office in Connecticut. I almost thought they were lying to me when they told me that who was on the line. So I talked to the guy and he said, Ken, I know you understand the jean business. And I said, yeah. He said, and you know that we can't make them fast enough. You know, we're domestically, privately held, domestically produced. We produce an excellent product. He said, but we're noticing some of our markets are kind of showing signs of getting smaller. Do we have a demographic issue? I said, okay. I said, who's your customer? And he said, an 18 to 34 year old man or woman. That's basically who we appeal to when we market. 18 to 34. I said, why do you cut it off at 34? And he said, basically, people can't fit in the product anymore once they get older. They put on weight and it's just not a comfortable product for them. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, so that makes sense. So you cut it off at 34 years old. I said, you know, you're a baby boomer business. And he said, of course I do. I said, the last baby boomer was born 1964. Yeah. I said, add 34 years to that.
You're done. Yes.
And he said, I said, what year did you come up with? And he said, 1998. And I said, what year? And there's silence on the other end. And he said, do we have a problem? And I said, you'll say. They went from yeah, no, sure.
I get it.
Yeah, then, well, they dropped about $5 billion in sales. Now you could get Levi Strauss and Walmart. I mean, it's they got exactly what they deserved because they were a piece of crap company. And I'm sorry, I'm just saying that.
But Ken, could they have
never been a Levi fan?
Could they have shifted their marketing strategy or done other products or something? Could they've done something?
They needed more material to apply to the bigger bellies of the older folks, is what he's saying.
Well, make something more comfortable. Make a Spanx product. They make something different. Or I don't know.
They tried that with Dockers, and it sort of worked. It's funny you say that because that's exactly what the guy asked me. He said, What about the generation that's up and coming? And I said, that's Generation X, and they're too small. They don't have the critical mass you'd have to suddenly shrink your company. And in a market economy, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. That's impossible. So I said, well, what about this huge crop of kids that are coming? Because he saw the millennials coming. And I said, I watch your commercials. You sell sex. You do. You put on the pants, you have sex. And he said, yeah. I said, well, do you think you appeal to those kids? They don't even know who you are. And they don't. And they didn't. They'll never have. So no. When you screw up at that level, when you are arrogant at that level, that's what happens to you. Mm-hmm. And that's what I tell my audiences. I say, listen, what's the most important question you can ask yourself as somebody who markets a product or service? And people say, well, I don't know. Yeah, well, how big is my market? And is it getting bigger or smaller? Because if it's getting smaller, I have a problem. If it's getting bigger, I have an opportunity. So off we go. Well, listen, do you remember, you're probably not a car guy. I'm a car guy. I like to build cars. I like fast cars. I drive fast. I have a 65 Mustang, and it's incredible. Lee Iacocca went to Henry Ford II and said, we're building the wrong car. We need to build a lightweight, two-door, powerful car that's fun to drive. And he persuaded him, and it took about 3 years to get this thing into production. In 1964 and a half, they came out with a Mustang. 1964 and a half model year, which was a stupid year, and 1965, which was started in September of 64. If he sold 100,000 cars, he would have been a hero. He sold 700,000. He could have sold about 4 million. Why? Because he didn't anticipate the buying power of the baby boomers.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
It was a total success story. So what's my point? And you can ask me a question.
Well, the arrogance, though, because you know what the eeriest thing about this conversation is? When you started speaking about arrogance of these people, immediately my mind jumped to Ford versus Ferrari. I'm sure you've seen the movie, yeah?
Yeah.
If you're a car guy. And then like a second later, you're talking about Lee Iacocca. And it's just so interesting because the way they were depicted in that movie, Ford, it is just classic ego and arrogance, and we know we're going to do it. It's the corporate behemoth, and it's just very interesting that you brought that up immediately after that.
Yeah, you know what Ford is doing now? Ford has hit a home run again with that new Bronco, which is a small SUV, and it's a resurrection of a car that they did 40 years ago, but they can't build them fast enough. Mm-hmm. Watch Ford stock.
Wow. Ken, let me ask you about immigration. How does immigration affect it? I know Gen X, you're talking about the income levels of Gen X. We're a little bit less because of the immigrant swell that we've had. They haven't been as strong earners as baby boomers. All. How does immigration affect demography and the different, whether it's the millennials, the Gen Xers, or the baby boomers?
Go find a Latino, kiss him on the lips, and thank him for coming. That's the story about immigration. Mm-hmm. Your generation, Generation X, could not supply the labor necessary to meet the needs of the baby boomers when the baby boomers became affluent. Mm-hmm. When they amassed wealth and became Republicans, they were once hippie radicals. They changed, truthfully. We sucked in, I'm going to guess, about 20 million Latinos. Now, do we know for sure? No, we don't. We don't. There's a lot of numbers in demographics that we simply do not know. And there's disparity from sources, but I'm going to say 20 million. So what we have is your generation was roughly 69 million versus the baby boomers at about 80 million. But now you're augmented by 20 million Latinos. Mm-hmm. Do you see them? You're in Florida, right? Mm-hmm. Could we function without them?
I was in New York. I couldn't function without them in New York. Absolutely. I totally agree.
No. Well, first of all, they assimilate perfectly. They're family oriented. Mm-hmm. In terms of being criminals, yes, we do have a little bit of a problem with it, but not bad. They're Catholics. They're wonderful. And what we're starting to get now, what demographers are starting to see with the Latinos, and that is our immigrant, incidentally.
They're going Republican. Yes.
Yeah. Forget everybody else.
Yes.
Because it is Latinos. They're going to start feeling their political weight here. Yes. Very soon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they're great. So that's what's the factor? The factor is here's one of the problems we're going to have with your generation is you're not producing enough tax. Big house consumption and income. Those are the state, federal, and local tax. What's the problem? You don't have enough critical mass to supply us with the heavy lifter tax that we need to run our country. Mm-hmm. And the Latinos are not ready yet. Mm-hmm. So what's going to happen to tax? It's going to go up. Mm-hmm. We will. The tax man cometh, period. Mm-hmm. No way around it. And we'll probably have that for the next 20 years.
Well, you can see it in the proposals, though. They're trying to, you know, as the baby boomers die off in terms of what was proposed recently, to scoop up some of that generational wealth going forward. I know there's a lot of proposals on the table that would impact it. Even with, you know, they were looking at 1031. They were looking at, you know, some of these things. So I think the generational squeeze on the baby boomer to the transfer to their kids is an opportunity that's also being looked at quite aggressively.
It's being looked at, but is
will they execute?
Will they execute? Well, that's the problem because so now we're suddenly going to take from the rich to give to the poor. Are we Robin Hood? Is that going to work? Never has.
So I'm just saying that it was on the table. So
Jake, we'll see. I understand.
I want to mention this, everyone, as we're listening to this, Ken is a great speaker. Does a lot of public speaking. If you want to get in touch with him at the end of the show, he'll leave his email address. He's also got an amazing book. I mean, as we're having this conversation, you see how demographics affects everything in society, from your business to tax implications going forward. So read the book. Upside is an amazing book. What I want to ask you, Ken, though, is as COVID, what have you seen COVID accelerate as far as demographics? We've seen people come down here. We've seen people buy RVs. We've seen people downsize their homes. We've seen people save money to be able to afford
exit the office space.
Exit the office space. What have you seen the biggest shifts or trends or accelerations during this last year and a half of COVID?
Two things, retail and office space. Mm-hmm. Yeah, retail never be the same. Never, can't be. Amazon. It'll be different. Will retail go away? Will brick and mortar retail go away? No. Will it be smaller? Yes. Will it be different? Radically. So
you think it shifts to the higher end products?
I don't know. I really don't.
I don't either. That's just the feeling that I get and the stuff that I've seen so far. I feel like it shifts to the retail spaces, is shifting to the higher end products that can support it. And then these activity driven, like jump jams, and they're kind of taking these places now, and there's activities where people can go and congregate in some of these old Sears and things like that. That's what I'm seeing short term. I don't know if this stuff holds up, but.
And Ken, what about industrial though? You see all these industrial warehouses coming up to support the Amazons of the world and even self-storage. What are your thoughts about self-storage as far as if there's critical mass? Are there enough people to support that industry as well?
Well, there's not enough structure to support that industry. Mm-hmm. And that's an issue. But it's not just warehousing. Don't look at just warehousing. What you're going to see, because I just shared the stage with high-level real estate folks, and what are they selling? They're selling industrial space. What the heck? Why are you selling industrial space? He said, well, small factories are coming back and larger businesses are expanding their production. And I said, do you know why that's occurring? And they said, it seems to be slowing down in Asia. I said, yes, it's almost going to stop in Asia. And they said, why
is that?
Because they don't have any labor. They killed their labor. They have a one child only policy in China.
I gotcha.
Yeah, under 40 years old. Now, depending on who you listen to, you want to listen to Elon Musk because he steals my stuff. It's okay, Elon. I like.
Hey, man, that's flatter, right? That's flatter.
Yeah. Rip off and duplicate. That's Elon, huh? The R&D, the R&D expert, I guess, huh?
Yeah, I guess. No, but he's charming. But he is saying that China is missing 750 million people under 40, and I'm saying a half billion or 500 million people under 40. What that has done to China, and they can't fix it because
did they just increase to two? Did I hear that correctly?
Three.
Yeah. Three. Yeah. Oh, wow.
And that's called the stupidest move you could ever make. I'll explain why. They're missing core people under 40 years old. Mm-hmm. So their working population began to shrink 3 years ago and it's nosediving.
And it's too late to catch up. There's going to be too much of a gap to catch up to that, right?
It's impossible to catch up.
Yeah.
They don't do immigrants. They're xenophobic. So where are they going to have babies that are 50 years old.
They start injecting him with stuff to make him mutants to grow faster. We watch.
that simply does not work. So what China has done is they've created a population of hundreds of millions of elderly people and growing, no workers in between. And now in their brilliance, the CCP has put in place a three-child only policy. So they're creating more dependents. They've just absolutely positively sabotaged their economy, and they can't.
And they're over-levered from a real estate perspective on their debt.
What's the Evergrande?
Yeah. Well, but but it's coming out. There's more coming out today. I just read it like an hour ago.
Yeah. Well, Evergrande's the best example of it, because Evergrande was a production company. I mean, they build roads, they build houses, they build office buildings, they build structure. The only problem is they built it for a population that doesn't exist. So what are they? Empty.
Wow. So Ken, last question before we go to short answers. If you're a state like Florida or like Alabama, do you say to yourself, these factories are coming back, how do I incentivize them to come to my state to open up and give them these tax breaks? Is that from that perspective, would you be telling states to do that? Because if factories are coming back, you want those jobs in your state.
Yeah, any kind of a tax break that can be given by a state will help. But the biggest advantage that a state has is it warm? Because that's where the population is going to be. And the population of Florida right now is about 23, 24 million. Nobody really knows. My best calculations would put it at about 35 in 15 years.
35 million. And there's room to grow. I mean, there's a lot of place to build here.
So, you just brought your 6 kids down, man. You're helping out. All right.
It's absolutely, why did my wife and I come down here? We operated our business out of Haddam, Connecticut. That's because we were getting murdered by state tax. There is no state tax down here. Mm-hmm. So this is a great place to work.
I lied. I have another question. So you see this going on. Someone like you, who's a producer, someone like myself and Jake, we're producers. We're leaving the Northeast of production. We're taking our tax dollars and coming down to Florida. How does the Northeast recuperate from that? Because they're getting an inflow, but maybe they're getting an immigrant inflow that's making less tax dollars, but they're losing producers and they're losing that tax revenue. How do those states recover?
Two ways. One, and because I get asked that all the time. And I'll be in Wisconsin and they'll say, oh, we're losing population. What do we do? And I said, do you have a good quality of life here? Oh, it's fantastic. I said, mm-hmm. Who's telling the story? No one. Give me a break. Mm-hmm. I said, who are the people that you're losing? Because I'll tell you who you're losing. You're losing a Generation Y millennials. You're losing people that are under, 36 and under. And they said, yeah. And I said, well, what do you think would make them stay? And they said, well, we're not sure. I said, well, one of the things is they can't afford your housing. Mm-hmm. So you have to do one of two things. Do something about your housing or pay them more, because that's the only way you're going to keep them. And the same thing in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has the same problem. Quality of life in Massachusetts, extremely high, extremely high. Millennial, try to live there. Hey, I just spoke in Canada. And the biggest problem in Canada, because they're not having children in Canada, no children, no immigrants. They only have like 20% immigration. Immigrants in their total population, which is not much. It's only not even 40 million.
Are they getting some Eskimos or what? No. Where are they coming from?
Who wants to go there, bro?
Some people that deal in bias are going to jump on that statement. But what happens is the Canadian young people can't afford to have kids, because you can't afford to live there because houses cost $1 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tell them to start exporting some of that lumber. You said we needed it, right?
I keep saying one more question, but these states are pretty much killing themselves, like California and New York, to build there. It's so cost prohibitive. So to continue to add on, you have taxes, you have regulation, you have all this crap to get something in the ground right away. Down here in Florida, you want to put a gas station, boom, up and done in 6 months. Try to build one in New York. Good luck doing anything in New York compared to down here. So they're shooting themselves in the foot. They're actually pushing you out. They're, as my partner likes to say, they're a theft. They rip you off because your freaking property taxes are 3 times as high up there. You get no services and then you're laughed upon. And then they say, okay, so how are you going to solve that problem if they don't want to even have the building? Because there's so many damn regulations to put up a structure there. Whereas down here, come, we're open for business. So I don't see them solving that problem. I really don't.
No, well, they're not. And if you looked at the states that lost population and lost house seats in the United States, it's the Northeast. Mm-hmm. I mean, it starts in Illinois and Michigan and Ohio, Pennsylvania, all across the board, all lost house seats, losing population. They're driving people out. Mm-hmm. Down here, one of the wonderful things about Florida is you don't have to worry about building a ton of schools. We just don't need them. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, most of the kids down here that parents that take education seriously put the kids in private school. So this is a great place to live. Listen, you can ask me questions. I budgeted about an hour for this, so I don't know where you are.
Gino's chomping at the bit. He's loving this.
Well, for me, we homeschool. So you got a lot of people down here who homeschool. I've got six kids. I'm actually dual enrolling my 11th grader. She's probably going to get 30 credits before she even goes to college. So there's so many options down here on that. And when you hear that they're building fire stations in Florida, they're building Catholic churches, they're building everything that you would not even dream of building up in the Northeast because they need the infrastructure. And they've seen this years ahead and they've planned. And that's what they've been doing here. And they're continuing to add the infrastructure. That's what excites me about the state going forward. If you're seeing $35 million, wow.
Where do you live?
I live in St. Augustine. So, I mean, you talk about jewels, paradises. It's about 45 minutes south of Jacksonville. It's in the St. Johns County region. It's one of the best school districts in Florida, they say, but it's just an amazing area. It's still affordable to live, and they're budgeting 100,000 homes in the next couple of years to be built here.
And there's a lot of history there too, yes.
Yeah, the oldest, it's amazing. Like one of the it's oldest an, city it's an in amazing country, place though. To live, yeah. It really is. And people have realized it, and property values have doubled in the last 4 years because a New Yorker can come down here, pay a house for half of what he paid in New York, taxes are one third, and you can use it as a vacation rental. So they've already seen that going on. And in Jacksonville, it's a nice city. It's the biggest city land-wise, and there's a lot of history here. The weather's fantastic. You get, you know, a little chill in the winter, which people like. You get hot summers. You're near the beach. You have tons of jobs. You have Amazon's here. You have insurance. You have banking. You have the military. So there's a plethora of jobs, and they've done an amazing job for that infrastructure. They keep putting in these roads, like six-lane highways. It's just what they've done here to me is impressive because I come from the Northeast where you're on the Hutchinson River Parkway, you get a half inch of rain, you're stuck in freaking flooding. And like that. You get stuck. It takes you 2 hours to go to 3 miles. People talk about traffic down here. Go to New York, hit the Grand Central Parkway, go over that Whitestone Bridge. But then let's talk about traffic.
Absolutely.
All right, guys, let's take a quick time out here from our sponsor.
Are you looking for ways to improve your life?
Here at Jake and Gino, our mission is to empower students through financial education and the vehicle of multifamily investing.
Yes, Jake. We agree that a person with financial intelligence can change the world for the better.
We've created our proprietary three-step framework, Buy Right, Manage Right, and Finance Right, that we teach to our community. This framework, along with education, our one-on-one mentorship, on-site boot camps, and the amazing community, has propelled our students to massive success.
We've all been there. We've had so many students that have been able to shift their mindset, overcome limiting beliefs, and set a clear path to achieve their goals. Whether you're currently fixing and flipping, wholesaling, or buying single-family rentals, and you know that multifamily investing is the right vehicle for you, I encourage you to visit jakeandgino.com/apply to schedule your complimentary consultation with our team. And I want to let you know, this isn't a high pressure sales call. It's really just a discovery call to get to know each other better and see if we're a good fit for working together. And if for any reason we're not a good fit, our team has tons of resources we will share with you to help you along your journey.
If you're ready to stop spinning your wheels, go to jakeandgino.com/apply and schedule your call now.
All right, we're back. Ken, I squeaked it in. You had something to say there, so I don't want to cut you off. What's on your mind, sir?
Okay, what people need to strongly take into consideration here, and keep in mind, is my last conversation was with a room full of truckers. Even a better one. Last week, I spoke to the Texas Cattle Feeders Association. Mm. And these are people who leave their hats on, you know, not in church, but they leave their hats on. I think they do leave them on in church. I'm not sure. But we're talking about very right wing, very conservative. And I said, folks, I said, first of all, I'm going to ask you, you got to promise not to beat me up. Okay? They all agree. I said, okay, this what we're doing is we're losing a conservative every 16 seconds because they're dying, because conservatives tend to be older. Again, on big picture, 30,000 feet macro, baby boomers are going to start to die. We're going to lose our conservative population. At the same time, we're gaining a liberal progressive every 8 seconds because they're coming of age to vote. I said, and so the difference between 2016 and 2020 was about 25 million vote advantage for the liberals. 25 million. Didn't exactly work out that way, but that's pretty much how where the numbers work. I said, by 2024, it's going to be 50 million. So what am I trying to say to you? I said, you're going to be dealing with a liberal White House probably for the next 11 years. I just don't see any other way around it.
So what's the seasoning, though, from the time the person becomes 18 until they have that conservative conversion. Awakening?
40-ish.
40. So you got a 20-year gap. Yeah.
Yeah. What you have.
Depending on how much you squeeze them for taxes and how bad the tyranny gets, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, as soon as they start amassing wealth, as soon as they have to, you know, what happened to baby boomer hippies? I grew up with, I was around in the late 60s and all of the 70s when the hippies
were in bed with the corporations now and they're being tyrannical. That's what's going on.
No, what happened is they grew up, amassed wealth, and became Republicans. And it's what we do. So don't worry about it. We have the problem, you know, with our nation battling right now, and the Republic seems to be in such trouble, is simply we have fierce conservatives and we have fierce liberals, and the population that normally makes up the moderates that cushions the blow, too small. Mm-hmm. And we've had that before. We had that before in the late 60s and 70s. We have it now. We're going to age out of it. We're fine. We're in good shape. But culturally, our nation is going to be more progressive and liberal, and we just need to get over it. And I tell my truckers, I said, the woke movement, I said, stand for something. Stand for something other than just making money. Mm-hmm. And you'll be fine. You know, one of the trucking companies was taking a stand against human trafficking, which seems to work out. I mean, this was a good thing. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. So our nation is in fine shape. We're the only world power, the only industrialized nation that has a Generation Y. Generation Y is off the charts in terms of how smart they are and what they can do. I know people make fun of millennials. I know they say that they don't want to work, but as soon as they grow up and have to raise a family, they're going to be just like everybody else. Mm-hmm. We're going to be fine.
Well, Ken, the other thing about the millennials is they at least have to want to work for a purpose. They want to have a vision. They may not have the skills to do it yet, but they're
much more sensitive.
Not getting a job to get a pension and work 40 years. They want to be part of something bigger, which is what I really respect and admire. You know, the young talent that we have at our company, they want to be part of something. And that's what you want from your employees, to be able to build a business and not just being there for the next 30 years and waiting to when you retire and check out. So I think that's really admirable on them. And they'll learn, they'll get the skill set. And they'll learn and they'll become leaders in their own right.
Well, they're going to be an interesting phenomena in the labor force, because what you're going to have is you're going to have leftover boomers, Generation X, you, and then you're going to have brilliant Generation Y millennials, and they'll make it their way into management, and they will be managing Generation X and some boomers. Mm-hmm. That is going to be a challenge. I tell folks, the corporations that I speak to, I said, if you're not taking HR seriously right now, If HR really is still personnel to you, where you get forms, I said, you're nuts. What you need to do is to look at HR more intensity than you do your finances, than your chief financial officer. Come up with a chief human resource officer that understands what's going on, and hire millennials. But don't hire them yourself. Hire a high level millennial, an A player, and have them hire millennials, because you won't be able to speak to them.
Mm-hmm. Some truth to that, that's for sure. From a personal finance perspective, anything people should be looking out for going into 2022? Any trends, anything there to benefit the folks that you're seeing?
Yeah, I'd be careful with the electric cars. I know there's a ton of them coming, but I'm hearing all kinds of stories about different fuels. So I'd be careful about that. Housing is going to be very strong. Any consumer products are going to be very, very strong. All you have to do is look at what populations normally do along the time or age continuum. And then look at the size of the population. It's in the book. In the size of the population that's headed towards a particular category. Let's take automotive. Who buys the most cars? And most cars are bought by a man 43 years old, but men and women 40 to 45, because that's when you buy your new car to take the kids places. And it's when you use the car the most. Who's headed for that? The largest generation in the history of our nation is headed right at that. What's going to happen to car sales? Is it going to go above 20 million? Yeah, we're way above that.
They're all going to buy electric cars.
Well, they'll buy electric cars until somebody comes.
They'll be buying some Teslas.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's funny, because I was talking. I've got a brother who just went to SEMA in Las Vegas, and he came back and he said, "Ken, have you heard of cars running on ammonia?" No. And I say, "No, NH3." And I'm thinking, "No." And he says, "Yeah." He said, "Watch it. Read up about it, because it's you don't need to go electric. You can take the existing technology run different fuel, and be carbon free.
What about the propane conversion to natural gas? You know,
well, as far as hydrogen, I mean, there's other alternatives. The electric gives you a problem. You're still using coal producing plants. The electric battery is so freaking toxic. It's there's so many different issues with that prototype, and nobody's talking about it. It's not going to solve a problem. It's good in the short term. You feel really good. Maybe you can make hybrid cars in the short term to get more gas mileage out of them, get them to 50, 60 miles per gallon, and then find an alternative in the meantime. Because I really believe, I agree.
You guys are missing what the customer wants. And I'm going to tell you right now why you're wrong. They like this for the folks not on YouTube. They like the iPhone. The Tesla comes out. It's like a damn driving iPhone. It's got the glitz, the glam, the dash. It's more than that. These people are dependent on the phone, and that's the attract. They don't really give a shit. And I'm not saying they don't completely give a shit about the environment. They feel like it's cool, and they're driving their damn iPhone. That's why these things are converting. They're fulfilling their wants. Okay. Just saying. So, I'm telling you,
he's
I'm
a crazy dude.
I'm making some sense.
What are your thoughts, Ken, on that statement? What do you agree, disagree?
No, short term, I would agree. Mm-hmm. Yeah, driving. One of the slides that I use is I show a picture of a Gen Y kid in his car looking at his cell phone, and I said, given a choice, which one would the Generation Y millennial give up first, the car or the cell phone? And the answer is they give the car up first. Yeah, Generation Y is spending a lot less time in cars, and what it's done is a teenage pregnancy has dropped like a stone.
Really? We're not going there. This is a family show. Hey, besides Florida, because I know you're loving Florida, best value market for multifamily. Where do you see the numbers going? Where do you see the millennials, the path of progress, and the value going forward here?
You know, it's funny. We did. I think I can say this.
Okay. Just no sex jokes.
No. We did one of the things that we do is we do research. And our reports are, you know, depending on how much information you want, probably they're under 200 pages. And we did Bain Capital Real Estate, wanted to know multifamily. And we did that. And they were very happy with it. And they're leading edge. These people are wicked smart. You almost can't make a mistake with multifamily. Multifamily is, and it's because somebody builds a housing unit for Generation Y, or they're going to sleep in their cars. So it's, but the big places, you know, I would build multifamily anywhere from North Carolina south over to Texas. I'd stay away from California. California makes me nervous.
Why?
I mean, talk about a breakdown, big time. But no, you almost can't make a mistake with multifamily.
So let's just dive real quick into the California. We have a lot of students who live in California. A lot of them it's amazing. They have a love-hate relationship. They love living there, but they hate paying 12%. But it's so beautiful out there, but they hate paying 12%. And it gets to a point where they're just like, they're making a serious amount of money and they just can't live there anymore. Why do you see California as a big problem? And can they right the ship?
You know, I don't know. You know, I lived in California for 8 years. I graduated from Cal State Long Beach. I loved California. The thing I didn't
everybody
like,
I speak to that's lived there loves California. They just have issues with it.
I moved because I'm sitting in a Porsche on the 405 freeway, doing this at about 4 miles.
Just rotting. You're losing life.
Yeah, and I'm thinking I'm not doing this. I'm just not.
That's one of the things that drove me out of New York. Yeah,
I'm just not doing it. So I moved to Connecticut and stayed there for 40 years. Moved back to Connecticut because I was from Connecticut. Mm-hmm. No, California doesn't seem to be able to get a handle on what kind of government they have. And they make it more and more and more difficult to live there. Mm-hmm. Why would you do that? It's 40 million people. I mean, a good indication was this census that was taken in 2020. They dropped bodies. Yeah. I mean, I don't know where they are. They're about 40 million, but and they're still
they have the population, they have the tech, they have the weather, they have everything, and they're screwing it up, guys. Come on.
Right. Yeah, and they are. What do I know? I just deal with population numbers. I guess if I was talking to a millennial and a millennial said to me, where should I go live? I would say go to Texas because you can buy a house there. It's still a reasonable price. There's unbelievable opportunities to work. I said, the only bad part about it is you have to live in Texas.
You go to Austin, you get California light.
keep Austin weird. Well, yeah. I think Texas is probably going to go blue. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm. See what happens here. Any insights into inflation? How long does this run for?
It's going to be for a while. And the reason is all you have to do is walk into Walmart. Walmart 5 years ago, ridiculously low prices. Why? Because everything was made in China. Everything was manufactured in China. What's the big advantage that China has? Well, China uses slave labor. That's another story. And China also, the people that work in China work for about 25% of what the rest of the world work at. But now that their population of labor, their labor population under 40 years old, that whole hole in their population is moving forward, manufacturing is going to go to other places. And one of the places it's going to go, obviously, is the United States. I believe that Mexico is going to explode and be, all we have to do is make sure that Mexico has a government, which mm-hmm. they don't. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can fix some problems in Canada, but the Americas, Canada, United States, Mexico, Central and South America are going to just be wonderful manufacturers of everything, but it ain't going to be cheap. So yes, inflation.
Is this a wake-up call for more self-reliance within the U.S. with everything that's sitting out in the you know, out in the shore of California and right. where you see like gas prices? This to me seems like it should be an awakening that we need to be more self-reliant. I don't know. What are your thoughts?
Yes. No, absolutely. But what I'm seeing happening here, you know, looking out at all the boats that are sitting out in the Pacific there, it's not going to stay that way. We're not going to bring in everything from the Orient. Simply, do you know what the fertility of South Korea is? It's one. South Korea is having fewer kids than China. What's the fertility of Taiwan? What's the fertility of Southeast Asia? They're not having kids. You don't have kids. You eventually do not have labor. You do not have labor. You're not going to manufacture anything.
So here's the thing. This is what we're saying here. You're printing a ton of money. Inflation is going to continue. And goods are going to become more expensive because your labor is going to get more expensive because there's not the cheap labor that's going to be coming over from, you know, Asia potentially going forward. That seems to be the long-term, you know, realization right. here. Yeah. All right. A couple more before we wrap up here. Any book recommendations, anything that has blown your hair back that you've read that will benefit the folks that you want to recommend?
Okay. Men Without Work would be one of them.
Yep. We got that one from earlier, right? Yep.
Dr. Nicholas Eberstadt. And apart from that, my book.
There we go. We keep it in the house here. So I'm sure it's on Amazon, right? Gina, hold it up again, the book.
Yeah. No. What? And if you want a signed inscribed copy, you can buy it on my website. The price is about the same.
What's your website?
It's at kgcdirect.com. kgcdirect.com.
We get the autographed version. Gina, you're gonna get me one for Christmas here or what?
Bro, you got it.
All right, so we go KGC, and then if folks are interested, we can get you there as our next keynote as well.
Well, you just go to my site, and if you want to see me in action, just watch one of the videos. There's a ton of videos. You can see what I do.
Yeah.
What my thing is I, you know, a lot of people don't come to my presentations that don't know me because they see demography and say, what the heck is that?
No, well, not this audience. You know, we love it here. It's everything from multifamily and our folks, our audience, they're doing events. We just did an 850 person event over there at the Gaylord Palms. So, you know, we love getting folks like yourself on stage as well. So it's important.
What I meant, I always wanted to do stand up. And so, I've taken a very dry subject and made it entertaining and inspirational.
That's art.
Yeah, that's us. Yeah.
G-Dad, wrap us up here. What you got?
Well, like he just said, he wants to turn into art. That's why I made the Kenny G reference. So maybe next time I'll just pick up a little instrument to play. He said Ken's had an amazing career. I mean, think back to 1986 in advertising, being able to transfer over and get into this space and continuing on with all of that, you know, diving into the numbers and understanding what happens with population shifts. I wish that we'd gotten to the demographics, precipitate economics. I missed that, but that's okay. You need to go to his website, read the book. And because this, we didn't get into healthcare, retirement, assisted living, vacation homes, death care, cemeteries, all those businesses.
Death care. We don't have enough cemeteries. We don't have enough crematoriums and we don't have enough funeral homes to handle what's going to happen when the baby boomers start to
buy dirt.
Yes. And that, that's some dirt. This is an evolving thing, but you can actually predict the future. Read Ken's book, go on his website, listen to his lectures, and you can actually see what's going on in the future right now. So I just want to thank Ken for being on. It's been
my pleasure.
An awesome show. Thank you. Thanks for being on, Ken.
You guys are cool. Take care.
Thanks.
Thank you. See you guys.
Thank you. get an 11% rebate at Menards. Keep your house or deck clean with Mold Armor products. Featuring built-in microband technology for enhanced cleaning power. Tackle your decking, siding, driveway, or any surface with ease. Mold Armor House Wash cleans mildew, mold, and algae stains. Plus, it's easy to use. Just spray and rinse off. Save big on cleaning products at Menards. Number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers, according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Save big.